This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
For most households, their transportation is their single largest impact on climate change. So if you want to think about what you can do to help and take responsibility for fighting this challenge, it's really take a look at your transportation habits.
With the climate crisis staring us right in the face, the need to transform our daily routines has become increasingly apparent. A part of the solution may be a new twist on the very old concept of sharing things. It's called collaborative consumption. We've seen how peer-to-peer networks allow us to share and buy goods and services from each other. And now that same concept is being applied by communities all over the world as a more efficient way to get around. This week's guest on Sea Change Radio, Amanda Eakin, the Deputy Director of Sustainable Communities at the Natural Resources Defense Council, will walk us through these new modes of shared transportation, from bike sharing to carpooling to taxi and car sharing, and show how emerging smartphone technology is playing a vital role in their rising popularity. I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by Amanda Eakin. She's the Deputy Director of Sustainable Communities for the NRDC, the Natural Resources Defense Council. Amanda, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Thanks, Alex. Good to be here.
As Deputy Director of Sustainable Communities, what are you tasked with generally? What's the mission of your division?
Yeah, most of what my work is focused on is fighting climate change. And in California here, 40% of the problem of climate change is really transportation. And we have programs in place that reduce making the cars more efficient and making the carbon content of the fuels cleaner. What I'm tasked with is creating communities and providing transportation choices basically so that people can drive less. Because if we just keep designing our communities so we have more and more driving, some of the analysis was showing that some of those programs to make the cars cleaner and the fuels cleaner, we're going to be threatened to be overturned by just the growth and the amount of driving that we're doing.
And it's not just the driving we're doing, it's the way we're driving, right?
That's right.
We often hear about communal living and collaborative consumption, but that doesn't usually spill over into the transportation sector. What are you and your colleagues doing to change that?
So I'll tell you, I grew up in New York City, and I grew up as somebody waiting for buses a lot. And I got very comfortable, like kind of looking out down the road, waiting for buses. And now that's getting a lot better because we have real-time arrival information on our phones. So it's getting easier and easier to use the public transportation system. But I will also tell you that when I find myself on occasion driving around San Francisco, especially on big streets with a lot of cars, and I see people waiting at a bus stop, just kind of waiting, it strikes me that there's all this mobility passing them by, you know, seats and seats and seats in car, empty cars going by them, but they're waiting for this one bus to show up. And I'll tell you, I've had to stop myself sometimes from just pulling over to bus stop and just telling people to get in my car and I'll take you where you need to go, because this is such a frustrating and inefficient system. And so what we're starting to see is a number of companies that have had the same idea that I had about how can we link up people who need to get somewhere with people who are already going somewhere, and they're starting to do something about it. And so what these companies are trying to do is take advantage of these trends of increased interest in sharing and collaborative consumption, increased focus on the cost of our transportation system, and increased concern about the environment to see if we can't connect people in real time, because we're all walking around with these smartphones. We can all check in and tell the world where we are at any given time. Connect people in real time with mobility solutions that could help them get where they want to go.
So let's first focus on some of the policies and ideas that are springing up from the rideshare movement. Mm-hmm. What are some of the ideas that make you more hopeful and that you think are progressive policies that are moving us in the right direction in that area?
Some of the trends that I think give me cause for optimism are that what we're seeing around the country is a real drop-off in the interest in driving, particularly among young people, and the interest in necessarily owning cars. So there was a great report just came out. In the last 10 years, the amount of driving of people ages 16 to 34 in the U.S. has dropped by 20%, which has really surprised economists and transportation planners. Nobody sort of saw this coming. We're seeing a really significant increase in the demand for living in walkable communities, both among millennials, who seem to be less interested in having their own backyard and taking care of it, more interested in vibrant communities where they can sort of walk out and have stuff to interact with, increasingly as well at the other end of the spectrum with the baby boomer generation, a lot more interest in living in sort of walkable places with amenities. So all of these trends kind of come together to suggest that there's possibly fertile ground for new innovation in the transportation system. And some of these companies, these ride-sharing and car-sharing companies, are kind of popping up to fill this space.
Where are some of the more intriguing ideas popping up, and what are they?
Yeah, so we all know, probably living in San Francisco, about car-sharing companies, like traditional Zipcar, City Car Share, and those companies make the case that when people share cars, they drive quite a bit fewer miles, and that's in fact what the analysis has shown. Some are nonprofit, some are for-profit. There's a next generation evolving from that, which is instead of a fixed location where you would get a car, you'd reserve it in advance, and then you'd have to return it there. There's some companies that now recognize that driving is expensive. On average, it's about $9,000 or $10,000 a year to own and maintain a car. And so what they want to do is go beyond a fixed fleet and say that anybody who owns a car could make their car a car share car, so that I could try to make back some of the cost of owning a car by making my car accessible to a community of potential users. And then another innovation is this idea that I could pull up on my smartphone, punch in where I am, where I want to go, and then I could get access to other cars that are already sort of driving around and get matched up with one of those cars and get where I need to go.
And is it completely a communal model, or is it a for-profit model?
So I think some of these are nonprofit, some of them are for-profit. But what they're trying to do is essentially build on a phenomenon of sharing that we've seen. People, starting to, on the internet, just share on Flickr, share on Twitter, share on Facebook, just share, taking that sort of sharing culture and taking it out into the world, into our transportation choices. And what they're trying to build on is this trend of kind of maybe an increasing focus on the importance of community. And some people have expressed very naturally concerns about safety. Why am I going to get in a car with a stranger? Is that really safe? And there's a woman who's written a book about, her name is Rachel Botsman, I think. She wrote a book about collaborative consumption. And she says what's happening is that technology is enabling us to do business basically with strangers. She references this website called SwapTree, where, she had a DVD that she didn't want anymore, but she did want another DVD, and she can access anyone around the world and put up what she didn't want anymore, and somebody else could say, well, I'll take that for what I have. And then the website prints out a postage label and they just swap. She's never met the person. She probably will never meet the person. But because that person has good ratings from other people and has done hundreds of swaps with perfect rating, we trust each other.
So that eBay model where there's an incentive for both buyer and seller, or swapper and swappee, to self-regulate, that's kind of been the template for some of these other transportation-focused models as well.
Right. I mean, if you think about it, we've had people doing casual carpool here in the Bay Area for, decades.
Well, explain what that is, though, for people who aren't familiar.
Sure. And then I think in Washington, D.C., it's called slugging or something. The idea is that there's an advantage for the driver, and whether it's a faster trip across a bridge or whether it's a less expensive trip across the bridge, there is an advantage to having a carpool, having other people in your car. So there's sort of these informal locations around the Bay Area where people will just line up, a car will show up, and a couple people will get in each car with a total stranger. And there's sort of a website about the etiquette of it. You don't really talk to your driver unless they initiate the conversation.
And my brother did this, and he said that one of the unwritten rules is you have to have it on NPR. You can't put the radio on anything else. Right.
NPR or silence are the options.
Right.
But, you know, people have been doing this because they both the rider and the driver perceive a benefit of getting in the car together and, you know, getting to work less expensive or more quickly. But that's totally informal, and there's no advanced planning, and there's no knowledge of the person you're getting in the car with. What these companies now are doing is they're trying to build on the prevalence of social networking to create kind of a community around car sharing. So when you come to join some of these companies, you have to have a Facebook account. You have to get, you know, have an active credit card. On the driver's side, they will run a, you know, criminal records check and background check, DMV records check, and they'll do an interview with you. And then I think one of the really interesting innovations of these companies is that when you're done with your trip, you get to rate the driver, and the driver gets to rate you back as the rider. So you're both very motivated to have good behavior.
And do you pay a fee to this company that's making it a kind of safer environment? Is that their, what's their incentive in this whole thing?
So when, you know, when your trip is done, what'll pop up is basically a suggested donation based on the mileage and based on the time.
Oh, to the driver.
Uh-huh, to the driver. And the company, you know, for facilitating the interaction takes a certain cut of that amount, but mostly it's an opportunity for an exchange, you know, for the driver to be compensated.
Now what would you do if I sang out of tune? Would you stand up and walk out on me? Bend me your ears and I'll sing you a song. Lord, I'll try not to sing out of key. I get by with a little help from my friends. I'm gonna try with the help from my friends. I get high with the help from my good friends.
To listen to Sea Change Radio anytime, anyplace, just subscribe to our free podcast. Simply follow the link from seachangeradio.com or search for us in the iTunes podcast directory.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking with the Deputy Director of Sustainable Communities for the NRDC, Amanda Eakin. What are some of the policies that are in place that or ideas that you've heard that make you more hopeful about trying to widen the net of consciousness when it comes to transportation solutions?
I mean, what we're really seeing is that particularly among young people, there is there's less and less interest in owning cars and much more interest and openness to this idea of sharing and much more openness to social networking. There was an interesting piece that I saw maybe about a year ago, and it asked people, would you rather have access to the internet or have your own car or have a car? And I think 46 people, and it was ages maybe 18 to 24 of young people, said they'd rather take access to the internet. Now, we were all surprised sort of in retrospect that that number wasn't even higher, but the alternative was a free car, at least in this hypothetical exercise. So 46% said, I don't care for a car. I'll take the internet. And because the sense is that with access to smartphone and Zipcar and ride sharing and all these choices, that you have the mobility, you can get access to the mobility you need without owning. And that's a theme that we're seeing over and over, this idea of it's about access now, not necessarily about ownership. The interesting thing about that article was that the rate, they also asked the parents' generation of that sort of millennial cohort, they were asking. Only, I think, maybe about a third, I think about 15% of the older generation said they would take the internet over the car. So you're definitely seeing generational shifts in this idea of I can get what I need by using the internet rather than necessarily owning things. And I think that's just going to continue to evolve.
How do we make people think before they get in that car?
Great question. So, you know, it used to be when you went to, remember MapQuest, you go to MapQuest and you look for point A to point B. It used to be you could only get access to information about driving. That was the sort of default. And it still bothers me when I go to conferences, when I go to meetings, and even if they're meetings about sustainability, which is what I work on, a lot of times you'll still get driving directions first and parking directions, right? And nothing about public transportation or biking options or anything. It's still sort of just the way we've done things for a long time. Now, you're now seeing, for example, on my phone, if I pull up where I want to go, I can see driving, I can see transit directions, and I can see walking directions. Google has biking directions, but that's not available for me yet on the smartphone. What I envision is maybe a world that's even a next generation. So things are moving in a better direction. I can get transit directions. I can see how long it'll be as compared to driving and how long it will take to walk. So that's good. It's giving us better information. What I envision is even the next step beyond that, where when you punch in where you are and where you want to go, you would get almost assaulted with the suite of mobility options that are available to you. So in there would be, where's the nearest bike share? And how far away will it be? And, you know, how much will it cost you? And where's the closest bike share drop-off location to where you're going? Where's a car share car that you could get? Maybe eventually you could get, I heard a great vision of, you could see all the cars around you, just cars that are parked on the street, and which ones of those cars are available for car share. And you could actually just use your smartphone to open the door to one of those cars and off you go with that car. You could get a map of where the closest rideshare options are, and that could pop up to you. So you would have all these choices to you going beyond just driving your own car there. And I think the better information we have about all those mobility solutions and how they're going to help us save money and save time, I think you start seeing people make better decisions.
How do you get smarter about approaching the way we move all our stuff around, including ourselves?
So I think what's neat about these, both the car sharing companies, but also this idea that we could all make our own cars, car share cars, is just the choices that it provides. So you see some people invest, and we talked about how the cost to own a car is close to $10,000 a year.
That's very high.
It is. So the idea is, it seems like a lot of people buy maybe a second car for that occasional trip, and they buy a sort of a specialized car for maybe the weekend trip where they need the four-wheel drive. The idea with, if we could all have access to many different types of cars, is maybe you actually don't need to own, for your everyday trips, that very rugged four-wheel drive. Maybe you can just have access to that car, again, access over ownership, when you need it. Similarly, maybe people want to have a sports car for the weekend to go up to wine country. You can reserve that car when you need it, and you don't have to actually own that car. Or sometimes you need a pickup truck. Sometimes you need a moving van. But you don't need to own these things. You just need access to them when you need them.
And people who don't have access to public transportation shouldn't be necessarily pessimistic about the future, because there are solutions that are outpacing these public work projects like public transportation. Building a high-speed rail system within a urban community can take decades. So what are some of the ways that we're accelerating that change?
So I think the promise of some of these companies, some of this whole ride sharing and car sharing, is that it can work within our existing system. It can work within our existing built environment, which in California, in a lot of places, does involve driving. And it can work fairly quickly. As people become part of a system, they could start offering car rides to their neighbors and start making back some of the money on their commute. Or one day they could choose not to drive and instead get a ride from someone else. And I think a lot of times people drive because of what they might need the car for, either at work or an after work trip. If they're comfortable and confident that they can get access to that car when they need it, then maybe they can take public transportation to work and get a car share car at lunch to do that errand that they needed to do, or get a ride home with a friend. I just think there's no end of the possibilities for how this could help us to save money, reduce congestion, reduce headache, really, and help to fight climate change.
And this obviously all revolves around climate change. Mm-hmm. Thinking about driving habits, I'd say that the recession could help reevaluate how we make those decisions, driving decisions, and then texting. There's mm-hmm. a lot of these new laws about texting. You mentioned how young people, a lot of them would prefer being on a bus where they can text without fear of being fined $200 for texting and driving. And then also DUI, drinking laws have gotten stricter and stricter. Do you think that those three things might have a role in trying to kind of changing the consciousness of drivers?
I absolutely think the trends you identified would have a role. And I'll go back to something that this woman, Rachel Botsman, who's a collaborative consumption expert, said. She had four trends. I think there's probably any number of ways to spin this. But she talked about the rise of smartphone technology and real-time communication access as one trend. Real concern, persistent concerns about unaddressed environmental issues. And we see this in poll after poll. People believe global warming is an issue, and they really are concerned about it. The third was a sort of a resurgence in the interest in community and how we can engage with each other and share in communities. And the fourth that was interesting was the recession that you spoke about, the global recession that really sort of shocked consumers a little bit and gave people an opportunity to step back and think about how we're engaging with our purchasing habits. And she identified those four trends as potentially very promising when it comes to opportunities to basically operate in a more sustainable way that, you know, that helps to address our environmental concerns, that helps us to save money, that taps into what she calls sort of our primal instincts to share and work together and, you know, collaborate, and then takes advantage of new technologies that enable us to share things with, you know, with strangers, essentially.
Follow the shift to sustainability with Sea Change Radio on Twitter at twitter.com/SeaChangeRadio and on our Facebook page.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking with the Deputy Director of Sustainable Communities at the NRDC, Amanda Eakin. Let's focus on bikes for a second. Not a very sexy solution on a large urban scale. We often think of the Cultural Revolution in China in the 60s where that was the ugly face of communism to some people when they looked at, this is a whole place where no one has cars. They're just all riding on bikes. But that piece of the Chinese solution in the 60s foreshadowed a lot of the answers that we're looking for today.
You know, what we're finding is so interesting is when we look at, because as I mentioned, transportation is a big piece of fighting climate change. And for most households, their transportation is their single largest impact on climate change. So if you want to think about what you can do to help and take responsibility for fighting this challenge, it's really take a look at your transportation habits. And, you know, we talk a lot about how air travel is very significant, but for most families, as a percentage of their, you know, their emissions, it's really your driving. And so then when we look at, well, can we solve this problem? The interesting fact is that most trips, over half of trips in this country, are under 3 miles. Which is a very bikeable distance, really. For a number of years, we've been very focused in the planning community on this idea that everybody would have a car, and that's how everybody would get around. And so we've widened our roads, and we've crammed parking in every place we can find it. And what we're finding is it's just not a sustainable solution. We can't fit everybody on the road in their own car. And so we're now, when we're seeing this, we're working with the Department of Transportation and we're working with the regional planning agencies. There's a real resurgence in this idea that biking and walking can be a really important parts of our transportation system. And so we're kind of now going back. There's a complete streets movement to take a look at whenever you repave the street as a transportation agency, You take a look at that street and you say, how am I making it safe for biking? How am I making it safe for walking? How is this street enhancing the experience of public transportation? I'm sure you've seen the transformation of the Valencia Street corridor over the last several years from, you know, a street that looked just like Guerrero, and I apologize to your national audience, just four lanes, and they took, you know, one lane in each direction, made it a bike lane. They've now widened the sidewalks, planted street trees. It's a completely different experience, and it's had a tremendous impact on biking in that corridor.
And the amount of shops that you would at least go into have doubled. If you're in your car, you're going to have to know beforehand that you're going to that destination. You're not browsing when you're driving, but you can browse a little bit when you bike.
That's right. And when you walk, a cluster of 30 bicycles. I mean, we've had a huge uptick in the number of people choosing to ride their bikes, in part because of interest in the environment, I think in part because of gas prices, in part because the infrastructure and the San Francisco Bike Coalition just done such a great job making it feel safe and comfortable.
So we all feel good about ourselves here, but can you explain your day-to-day struggle? It's not so simple, and there's a lot of barriers to accepting these solutions that we're discussing here. Can you describe some of the pushback that the bike lane movement and other areas of collaborative consumption are facing?
So I'll tell you, when we started to implement this program, SB 375, in Southern California, there was a lot of resistance to this idea that we would have to move in a different direction. There was actually quite a bit of hostility about the program. And what we started talking about was the ways that moving in this direction can be good for people. So the ways that it can help fight traffic congestion and improve air quality. And there are tremendous public health impacts of moving towards a more balanced multimodal transportation system, with even documented statistically significant weight loss of people that live in walkable areas as compared to people who just have to drive for everything that they do. And households can save quite a bit of money. The estimates are that households could save thousands of dollars a year from having more transportation choices provided to them. In addition, water savings and farmland savings from more sustainable communities. And so we start to focus on all of these aspects, all the ways that what we're advocating makes sense for people. And, you know, it really turned around to the point where last April we had a unanimous vote of an 84-member council of governments, including places in Orange County and the Inland Empire, to vote for a sustainable communities plan that would dramatically improve their quality of life, improve air quality, reduce congestion. So I think we're seeing that people see all the other reasons to do this besides simply fighting climate change.
So what role do you see collaborative consumption playing in helping us solve this seemingly intractable problem of global climate change?
When we look at climate change and we look at where we are in California, transportation is 40% of the problem. So we've got to tackle transportation if we're going to get a hold of this problem. What we're also seeing are some tremendously promising trends about the ways that, about the demands and preferences people, especially young people, have. So I think there is an opportunity, there's sort of fertile ground for the idea of sharing to move its way into our transportation system. If you look at the system now, 80% of seats in cars driving on the road are empty seats. So that is nowhere near an efficient system. I'm confident that we're all smart enough that we can do a lot better than that. And that is what some of these companies are trying to do right now. Connect people in real time, taking advantage of these trends of increasingly available smartphone technology and the rise of social networking, to connect each other to see if we can't make that system operate more efficiently, helping to cut our emissions, helping to save people money, save them time, reduce congestion, and critically contribute to fighting climate change.
She's the Deputy Director of Sustainable Communities for the Natural Resources Defense Council, Amanda Eakin. Amanda, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
Thanks, Alex. Great to be here.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise. Additional music by Will Bernard, James Taylor, and Aretha Franklin. Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.